Welcome to the Real Talk of Dental, where we pull back the bib and talk about what's really going on beneath the surface. Not just the charts, not just the systems. We're talking about the culture, the chaos, and the confessions. I'm Brandy Marzolino, and with 20 years deep in this industry, I am fresh out of patience for performative leadership. This is your space to laugh, cry, question everything, and maybe shout into a pillow between patients. We've got anonymous confessions, we've got call-ins, we've got ops room drama, and we've got the truth, served hot and a little too real. Think of this as your backstage pass to the break room no one dares to mic. Until now. Imagine being a new grad and you are interested in purchasing your very first dental practice. You connect with the real estate broker who's listing the practice. You start the negotiations with the seller. You get close to finalizing the agreement, and then you realize that, oh, there's a building associated with this agreement, and now my back's against the wall because I'm in the final stages of negotiating on this agreement, and I haven't really thought about the real estate aspect. I'm just going to go ahead, have the broker help me with this, and see what are my chances. Well, that happens a lot. And according to Kyle Wheeler from Carr Real Estate, and that is why they're so passionate and committed to representing the buyer side of dentistry, because they've seen so many times how people on the other side of the table are not getting proper representation. And he wants to educate and inform people as much as possible on how much you're actually leaving on the table and how going into these conversations without any kind of leverage can really put you in a compromising position. Kyle shares a lot of ideas that you probably may not have thought about when you're going into purchasing, leasing, or even building your own practice. And who knew there were so many things that you could actually negotiate for when you enter into these kinds of conversations? The kicker is that you don't even pay for the representation on the buyer side. The seller does. So it's almost kind of foolish to not have someone like Kyle in your corner as you begin this phase of your life. He also suggests starting at least 5 years ahead of when you need to make your next move, because that gives you time in order to make proper negotiations. Because if you're coming into conversations when you have about 6 or 7 months left on your agreement, it doesn't leave you much to negotiate with when the person on the other end of the table knows that your back is against the wall and there's only a limited amount of time before you have to make up your mind. So you can easily start these conversations well in advance so that you can go into your future feeling really empowered and having a lot of ideas on how you can make your next move. It's a really, really awesome conversation, and I'm so glad that Kyle brings these things to the table, because I'm all about power through education. And it's also one of the biggest things I'm really advocating for inside of my leadership program for women in dental, because I truly believe that education is power and you want to be somebody who's informed as you go through these chapters of your career. Please enjoy my conversation with Kyle Wheeler from Carr Real Estate. Kyle Wheeler, welcome to the Real Talk of Dental. Super happy to have you on here, fellow Michigander now, which is also exciting. And today we're going to be talking about real estate. And something that's really cool about you and your role is you actually represent the buyer. And so you come into deals with that mindset, which I think a lot of people probably overlook or underestimate the power of that. And I really love talking to you about this kind of stuff because you're so informed and you care deeply about the people that you work with. And you're also very passionate about educating people on this topic, because it is something that gets overlooked a lot. And people often think they know what they're talking about or they know how to handle certain situations. And the reality is most people don't, because that's not an area that they specialize in. And so I want to hear from you. What is something that you see as the most overlooked thing with people when they're looking for leases or buying or anything like that from the side of the buyer?
That's a great question. And thank you so much for having me on. I'm excited to be here. You know, it's so common for dentists and healthcare providers alike to handle this on their own, honestly, just overlook the entire thing. You know, everything with going to dental school and, either acquiring a practice or starting a practice. It's so exciting, and it's easy to get wrapped up in, you know, the equipment and the branding and the marketing and the logo and the website, and excited about the patients you're going to see in the clinical work. But there's so much more that goes on behind the scenes, from your real estate to hiring and buying equipment and growing your practice. And all of that stuff just seems to be an afterthought. And unfortunately, so many times, you know, we realize when it's too late that it was an issue or not set up properly, and we have to wait until the next go around or until something does kind of hit the fan to make the improvement or make the change.
Yeah. What do you think is a common thing that gets overlooked, that, or where you find that folks like you and your team could be of greatest service to your clients?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, obviously I can easily say just real estate as a whole. You know, a lot of times dentists, they have experience with buying a house or renting an apartment, and it's easy to be like, oh, well, I'm going to rent this space, or I'm going to buy this building. And it's the same process as working on the residential deal that I did in the past, but nothing could be more untrue. Mm. Commercial real estate is the Wild West. Anything flies. Everything is negotiable. Nothing is legally binding until leases or purchase agreements are signed. So leverage is a huge piece in these deals. And so, you know, to be more specific, I'd say if I had to pick one area, lease renewals and practice acquisitions are two transactions that dentists more often than not go unrepresented in and get taken advantage of hugely, in the tune of tens to hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Mm. So on the practice acquisition side, tell me more about that.
Yeah. You know, a lot of times these practices get listed as a practice for sale. They're not on the MLS. It's not like, hey, here's this building for sale, and oh, by the way, there's a $1.2 million producing general dentist business that comes along with it. It's the other way around. So if I'm a dentist coming out of dental school or an associate looking to buy a practice, I'm going to be connecting with practice brokers, which I am not. And those individuals hold the keys to what practices are available. These practices that are for sale, it's typically confidential. They don't want this blasted all over the place. It's a highly sensitive transaction. And so you kind of have to go to the people that are representing them as their fiduciary, who are listing their practices for sale. And it's not uncommon at all to get into that scenario. You're talking with the practice broker, who has a fiduciary responsibility to the seller, not to you. And they are telling you everything about the practice you want to know. You know, the price, what are the financials, what's the production, how many patients come with it, is the staff staying, how long is the doctor sitting around or going to stick around. And you negotiate on that practice, you get far deep into the weeds with it. And the last thing comes up once that's fully negotiated, and it's like, oh crap, we need to lease this space, or we need to buy this building. Well, at that point, your back is slammed up against the wall. You have zero leverage. The selling doctor knows that you don't have another option. You're not going to buy this practice and flip it completely on its head by changing hands of the doctor and then also move it up the street 3 miles at the same time. You pretty much have to practice in the building that that practice is practicing in currently. So, you know, where I can come in those scenarios is ideally simultaneously to when you are looking under the hood of the practice. I'm getting engaged. I'm starting to identify, okay, are you planning to lease this space? Are you going to buy it? Who owns the building? Is it the selling doctor, or is it a third party landlord? And then ideally, we negotiate on those things at the same time. While you and your broker, your practice broker, are negotiating on the practice, you and I are looking under the hood at the proposed purchase price or the proposed lease terms, and I'm comparing that against the market and helping you navigate that negotiation so that we can pit them against one another. You know, hey, we're in agreement on the acquisition price, but this lease value is way too high. So something's got to give in order for this to make sense. And you can spin that in any type of scenario that you'd like. But using those as leverage against one another to get the best terms possible, not only for the practice, but also on the real estate side, because the real estate is typically the second highest expense for a dental practice.
So should potential buyers bring you in right away as they're speaking with the broker for the practice?
Yes. My recommendation, if you're an associate or a new grad looking to buy a practice, get connected with the practice brokers and get connected with a real estate agent like myself that you trust. And I always also recommend having a CPA or a consultant in your back pocket as well, just for checks and balances. You know, you want people in your corner that have a fiduciary responsibility to you and only you. So, you know, the practice broker is going to play nice in the sandbox, but pretty immediately I would get myself or similar involved on the real estate side, and then at the same time get a consultant or a CPA involved to review the financials and the production to make sure all that matches up.
Yeah. Hey, I just want to pop in on today's episode and talk to you about this new GPT I wrote called Boundary Boss GPT. And it's for those moments where you've said yes to something and immediately felt that pit in your stomach, or maybe you've now written 5 drafts of an email because you're trying not to sound mean, even though you're exhausted and you swear you've said this thing so many times to the same person, or you're kind of sick and tired of staying late, taking it on, smoothing things over, and wonder why you're the one that's always burning out. A lot of the conversations that I have on this podcast, we often hear about people hitting these walls of burnout and oftentimes not even knowing what to say. So that's why I built Boundary Boss GPT. It's kind of like having me in your pocket when you're about to respond to a text, email, or team issue, and you just don't know what to say because your people-pleasing brain is completely hijacking you. This is going to help you have clarity, confidence, and self-respect without the guilt, over-explaining, or the drama. Go ahead and grab it in the show notes below. It's totally free, and you're going to love it. Okay, now back to this awesome conversation. You mentioned earlier, too, like loss negotiations that people aren't thinking about. What are some other things that can be negotiated that people aren't aware of?
That's a great question. You know, a lease, which more often than not in a practice acquisition scenario, the doctor who's buying is going to lease for a period of time. You know, there's so many things that are negotiable, from how long is that lease going to be? What is that lease's cost per square foot? Is there any free rent and free operating expenses in that lease, which is a period of time in the beginning where you're not paying rent? Does the space need to be updated? And if so, are we getting any tenant improvement allowance, which is money directly from the landlord to go towards those construction costs of doing the renovation? You can negotiate parking. You can negotiate signage. You can negotiate who takes care of the HVAC system. I mean, literally anything is negotiable. Every deal is different. And every landlord is different too. So having somebody that understands how these deals work is important. So a commercial real estate agent, but then I always say a step further, somebody that understands your industry and what's important to you and can explain to you why we need to set up the deal in a certain way to protect your profitability.
Yeah. And I'm wondering too, I mean, some people could be listening to this thinking like, oh man, we're like splitting hairs here, but you've seen substantial return on people working with you, right? Like upwards of upwards of what? I guess if people really are to get an agent like yourself who's representing the buyer early on, what kind of savings have you seen?
Anywhere from tens to hundreds of thousands of dollars. Again, every scenario is different, but I can confidently say there's always meat on the bone. And we're going to be honest with you in scenarios, depending on what the numbers look like. If it's like, hey, like this actually looks pretty good, We can't save the world for you, but in scenarios where there's a lot of savings on the line, we're going to always go get that for you. So, you know, there's been situations where I've saved a doctor $25,000, and there's been another scenario where I saved a doctor $600,000 on the next 10-year term of her lease. So it really just depends on the circumstances and how realistic the landlord or the seller is being, or how out of line your lease is in a lease renewal scenario to determine how much meat is on the bone in the negotiations.
Yeah, and you also represent if somebody is doing like a scratch start as well, right? So it's not necessarily buying an existing business, but also if they're going to be building their own office as well, is that something that you support with?
Correct. Yep. You mentioned in the beginning, I do buyer and tenant representation only. So if you are looking to do a startup, whether that's a lease or a purchase, an acquisition, whether a lease or a purchase, additional locations, expansions, lease renewals, land purchases and ground up projects, anything that involves you buying or leasing real estate for your practice, I can assist with. The only thing that I cannot assist with is if you are a practice owner and you own your building and you want to sell it, or if you own your building and have vacant space in it that you're trying to lease to somebody, I cannot represent you on that side of the table.
Yeah. So if somebody is looking to do a startup, what are some things that, because I think you and I, when we've had conversations in the past, I remember some of the things you were mentioning that often get overlooked, where I was, even as you were telling me, I was like, wow, yeah, that's pretty substantial. What are some things that often get overlooked from a startup perspective?
This is my opinion, and this is a plug for you, Brandy. I love consultants in startup scenarios. Doing a startup is a lot of work, and more often than not, you're an associate simultaneously. So you're working 40, 50 hours a week and trying to start a practice, which takes 40 to 50 hours a week as well. So working with somebody that specializes in dentistry and can help navigate all of the channels of discussion that you're going to be having with real estate attorneys, CPAs, architects, designers, general contractors, equipment specialists, territory reps, and the list goes on, that has been through it before, because more than likely you have not, the better. So I see a major difference in startup deals where a consultant is involved and when they're not. You can do it without a consultant. Not saying that you have to have one, but I would highly recommend having somebody in your corner. And then, as far as things to look out for, I truly believe it's worth the investment to do a demographic study, whether through Denographics or similar. Carr has an internal mapping and demographics team that has resources to provide demographics as well to our clients. So that's something that we can assist with. So I would say that's a big piece, especially for general dentistry. If talking Grand Rapids, like over on Cascade and the Beltline, like I'd be curious what Denographics has to say about a general dentist starting up in that area. But if you're a pediatric dentist in Grand Rapids, we can probably look at Google Maps and come up with a good solid game plan of what the good areas are and the bad areas to start up in. Probably the biggest thing for a startup that is essential is getting tenant improvement allowance in a lease scenario. So it happens where somebody's starting a practice and they're also buying land and building a building or buying a building as well. I'd say 9 out of 10 times, though, the lenders are going to say that's biting off more than you can chew to start. You need to do a lease first. So dental practices aren't just sitting around waiting for people to come by and start up practices in. It's very seldom that you're finding a vacant dental office that's ready to move in and start practicing the next day. More often than not, you're finding a vacant physical therapy suite or a vacant medical suite, or maybe it's not even healthcare, it might be an old coffee shop, and you're having to bring in an architect and a general contractor and redesign this space basically from ground zero and put $400,000, $500,000, $600,000, $700,000 into it. And so, in order to get as much of your investment back, we want the landlord to participate in those costs. This is the landlord's building. You don't own it, but the investment's necessary on your end as well in order to have a successful business. But if there's a way that we can offset those costs by getting money from the landlord, that's super beneficial. And when I say getting money from the landlord, a lot of times that's in the tune of $40 to $50 a square foot. So if you have a 2,000 square foot space times $50 a square foot, that's $100,000 if my math is correct. And that's a good chunk of change that you don't need to pay for any longer with the cost of construction. So, to answer your question, I hear it all the time where somebody used their friend or their office manager's husband that's a residential realtor, and they go negotiate this commercial lease. They've never done it before, but it seems easy. And they didn't even know to ask for tenant improvement allowance. And if you don't ask for it, the landlord's not gonna say, oh, wait, hold on a minute. I got 100 grand sitting in the bank account that I'll give you to put into your construction. They're gonna say, awesome, they didn't ask for it. It sounds so silly to talk about, but people just don't know what they don't know. And this isn't stuff that you learn in dental school, but it's simple at the end of the day. And you just have to have the right person on your side that knows to ask for it and set up the right leverage to get the numbers that you're looking for.
Yeah, I hear kind of what you're saying is a lot of times people are looking to keep costs down, a potential, a buyer's looking to keep costs down. And so they might try to cut some corners when it comes to this stuff. And what you're saying, not all agents are created equal, especially in the differing side between commercial and residential, and then those that are in commercial representing the buyer in dentistry. It's very, very specific. And cutting costs, you might think you're saving yourself money, but in the long run, you're probably losing a substantial amount of money. So it's smarter, makes a lot more sense to go the route of what you all represent, because in the end, you're actually going to be saving quite a bit of money.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, and you hit the nail on the head. Me and every other person in Michigan that has a real estate license took the same 40-hour course, the same test. As far as somebody that can look at the MLS and tell you what land and what buildings and what leases are available, me and every other person can do that with a commercial real estate license. The differentiator is I understand dentistry, I understand what's important to you, I represent buyers and tenants exclusively, which is a differentiator in its own. And working with people as specialized as possible, the better. I always say this, and it's a just a joke, but there's veterinarians that specialize in animal teeth. I wouldn't go see a veterinarian that is a dentist for animals. I'm gonna go see a dentist that works on human teeth. They're both dentists, one could say, but at the end of the day, you want to work with somebody that specializes in what you're looking for and what you do specifically. And you can say that across the board.
Yeah, and I think most buyers and tenants probably rely on the broker, right, to handle a lot of the building and land or whatever aspect of the deal is going through, then hiring a separate agent for that is what my guess is too. So either they might know somebody in real estate or they're just relying on the broker to kind of put the deal together. Is that fair to say?
Yep, it's very common for somebody to reach out to the listing agent or in a practice transition scenario, the practice broker, and they can handle it for you. But little do you know, like I said in the beginning, they're representing the seller. And so they'll gladly help you, but at the end of the day, their fiduciary lies on the other side of the table.
Yeah. What are some other big misconceptions you think people have when it comes to leasing, buying, building that you've been running into?
Another thing that is interesting is having the right amount of time. So it's really easy to push things to the side. Hey, I want to renew my lease. It's 2 years away. Like, we got plenty of time to renew the lease and get better terms. Or, we want to buy a building, but we got 3 years left on our lease. Like, we have plenty of time to start looking. There's always a misconception on how much time this stuff actually takes to assemble the team, find the right place, negotiate the deal, do your construction, order equipment, get marketing humming, move in, and start practicing. So, in almost any scenario, whether it's a startup, a lease renewal, a relocation, additional location, 18 to 24 months in advance of when you would like to be opening your doors is the right time to get the discussion or the process started. Twofold. One, everything that I just said, things take time, finding the right place, all that good stuff. But more importantly, for leverage purposes. So in commercial real estate, those with the most options win. I'll speak on residential real quick. If you've ever bought a house before, you make one offer at a time. If you make an offer on a house, you're sending out a legally binding contract. And if that legally binding contract is accepted, you're under contract on that home. So you don't want to make offers on two homes at the same time, because if they're both accepted, unless you were looking for two houses, you're probably not going to be very excited. For real estate, it's the exact opposite. You are not legally binded to anything until the lease is signed or the purchase agreement is signed. So it's all about options. So the more options you have, the more leverage you have. And the way to get more options is to have more time. So if we're, for example, let's just say you're currently leasing and we're 3 years out from your lease expiration, and You would consider staying if we're able to get better terms. You'd consider buying a building and renovating it. And you'd also consider buying land and building a building. Well, good news for you, we have 3 years and you can buy land and build a building in 3 years. You can buy a building and renovate in 3 years. And we can make your landlord think that you can do both of those things and it's believable. So they're going to give you better terms because we have all that time. But if we're, new example, if we're 6 months out from lease expiration, you don't have time to buy land and build a building. You don't have time to buy a building and renovate it. And your landlord's probably not going to give you better terms on your lease renewal because when I go to them and say, hey, if you don't give us better terms, Dr. So-and-so is going to move, they're going to go, they are not going to move. They only have 6 months. They don't have the time to move. And so there's no leverage. So full circle here, but I would say a big misconception is how much time you need. I'd much rather get connected with somebody that's 5 years out from their next transaction than somebody that's 5 months out. I'll still do what I can in the scenarios where it's 5 months out, but these things take a good amount of time typically.
Yeah, you always want to be thinking ahead, right? And it's another thing to consider as for business owners or just even people that are dipping their toe in and just exploring options. I think most people might be a little gun shy to make those, assumptions, I guess, with their landlord. But it sounds like the way you all work it out is in a way that makes sense and works. And, they're not making these false threats unless that's real for them. I mean, do you usually use that as a way to leverage, or do you find that most people truly are looking to leave and build, or they're just using that as leverage, like you're saying?
It's great leverage, especially if we have the right amount of time. Mm-hmm. But not every time in a lease renewal scenario is the doctor actually willing to leave. But at the end of the day, that might feel wrong, for a lack of better terms, but this is business. Yeah. You got to protect your profitability. The landlord's definitely going to protect their profitability as well. So you got to do what you got to do in order to get the best terms possible. And at the end of the day, it does have to be a win-win, and it will be. Dentists are blue chip tenants. They're great people for landlords to have in the buildings. They sign long leases. They bring great people to the property. They pay on time. They don't cause any problems. And landlords don't want to lose that, even if they put up a fight and make it seem that way. So it works. The process works. And to speak out of the other side of my mouth, here in Michigan especially, real estate values are so reasonable that even in scenarios where I talk to a doctor that's wanting to do a lease renewal, we'll go to the market and look at land and buildings, and I can put together a purchase versus lease pro forma. And you're going to see that it makes sense to buy here. Not every market is the same. For the people listening in Chicago or Nashville or Los Angeles, I'm sorry, the numbers aren't going to look that pretty for owning, even though there's still a lot of advantages from a taxes and appreciation perspective. But here in Michigan, I run into it frequently where somebody's like, I'd never buy a building. And then we get to the brass tacks and it's like, oh, I could own the building for the same cost that I'm leasing over the next 10 years. I might as well buy. So
yeah,
it is interesting how that works out.
Yeah. And you never know. I mean, gosh, if anything, we know from working in dentistry for a long time that things can change really quickly. So even though someone might think that they're going to be in the same situation for the next 5 years, more often than not, that's not the case. So I like the idea of keeping options open too and just seeing what's possible. Yeah, this is all super helpful. And we're going to pivot just for a second here, because I think something that's so interesting about you is you actually went to school for music performance, was it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep,
yeah.
I did.
So remind me again, what were you performing in music? What was your instrument of choice?
So I played drum set.
That's right.
Yep. It's definitely unique. I had an awesome high school experience. The high school I went to had a fantastic music program, and I would say I was a big fish in a small pond and just had awesome resources and musicians and teachers and professors coming in on a regular basis, and was just inspired and fell in love with it. So I started studying with the professor at Western Michigan University my freshman year of high school, and just kind of always knew that I was going to go there and pursue a music performance degree. And that's what happened until after my junior year. I think reality kind of struck, and it was like, okay, well, I want a family, I'm type A, and I want consistent income and these nice things. And being a professional musician doesn't necessarily align with that. It's possible, but just realized it wasn't for me long term, but it made me who I was, you know, it's or who I am. It was an awesome experience, met a lot of great people, learned a lot about marketing myself and kind of running my own business, and the creativity that comes along with being a musician has continued to inspire me in the work that I do today. So it was feels like a different life that I was pursuing that, but it was a really good experience.
That's awesome. So what was the kind of music that you liked to play when you were on the drums?
Yeah, so my degree is actually technically in jazz studies.
Ooh.
So played a lot of jazz, Afro-Cuban, Latin style music. At least that's what I was studying in school. And I do really enjoy that. It's a very expressive music. It's a lot of improvisations of thinking on your feet and communicating with the band and playing off of one another, which is a lot of fun. But that doesn't necessarily always get you paid at gigs. So played a lot of top 50 hits gigs at bars and stuff like that in Kalamazoo on the weekends and weddings and things along that line as well.
So cool. And do you ever get back on the drums now? Do you have time for that? I know you're a dad with two young ones and you got a real busy client roster, I'm sure. But do you ever find yourself getting back on the drums?
Yeah, it's sad to say, but I haven't been playing much. Definitely busy with a young family and work, and then just a little bit of burnout after school. If you've seen the movie Whiplash, yes. It's not quite that intense, but you know, you're married to the practice room for 4 years. So I'll come back around. I will. It's still all in my head. I'll have to work things out with my fingers and my feet again one day, but I do not get the chance to play as often as I would like to these days.
Yeah, I'm sure it taught you how to think in some ways, like you're saying. I mean, my degrees originally are in geology that everyone always gets a kick out of, but I always say it taught me how to think. There was so much about that training and the scientific training that you go through and writing research papers and defending your research papers and having it all challenged, you know, and defending them and things. I mean, there's a whole thing that goes with that. So how it's, you know, helped shape me as somebody who works with like operations and strategy and my consistent, like, you know, being inquisitive about everything and not believing everything the first time I hear it, right? And being a critical thinker, which I think a lot of people don't have anymore. So I think that's been something that's been really important for me that really helped me, you know, training my brain and I always say it taught me how to think. And I don't think people even have a training on how to process information and how to actually think, right? Especially nowadays with the way information is delivered to us. But I'm sure as a musician and the training that you went through, and then also it sounds like there was an incredible amount of like discipline and perseverance and consistency and due diligence and all of that. And then also how music all plays into it. Like you said, you know, improvising. So it probably taught you a lot to even, like, again, you think, oh, gosh, you know, a trained drummer and real estate, like, how does that make sense? But I'm sure it makes sense to you because there's certain parts of your mind and the way you're operating where you can see the crossover. And I can see it being somebody that is similar in that way. It's really taught you how to show up and how to think probably and perform too.
Yeah, absolutely. It all happened for a reason. I might not be playing rudiments and smashing drums and cymbals all day, but the principles that I learned are all relevant.
Yeah.
So I'm thankful for the experience.
That's awesome. Well, Kyle, thank you so much for being on. I just love talking about this stuff with you because I think, like you've said, it's an area that not a lot of people talk about. I think most people nowadays just take it for granted and they don't talk about the nuance that goes into these types of transactions. And then people move pretty quickly and there's a lot of trust. I think that people, you know, in the broker space or with the buyers are like thinking everybody's just kind of generally negotiating, hoping for the right thing. But you're coming at it with a lens that very few people actually have, unless they've done this a million times. But I think you represent something that people need to pay attention to more. So I'm really happy that we're able to have this conversation. And if there's one thing you would like to leave people with, what do you think would be something you'd want to share?
You know, one thing that I haven't pointed out, or I guess two things. One, CAR is a national brokerage, so we have agents in all 50 states. So wherever you are, we have somebody that can help you out. And then secondly, representation on the buyer or tenant side of the deal doesn't cost you anything. Mm-hmm. So we get paid by the landlord or the seller, similar to residential real estate. If you're buying a house, you don't pay your realtor, the seller does. So there's no harm in partnering with somebody like myself from CAR or another real estate brokerage to ensure that somebody's looking out for your best interests and only your best interests.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Kyle. It was awesome having you on.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate you a lot.
You just listened to The Real Talk of Dental. If it hit, if it stung, if it made you feel just a little more human, good. That's the point. This isn't about fixing practices. It's about healing people. And if you're brave enough to show up real in this industry, you're my kind of leader. Subscribe, call in, send your wildest workplace confession. And most importantly, don't clean up for anyone. The mess, that's where the magic lives. We'll see you again on the next episode.